I don't know how many times you've listened to our opening, folks, but this is the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network. You never know what's going to happen here. It's Friday night outside New Orleans, in New Orleans, and over where Pete Haviland is. Pete, say hello.
Hey, how you doing tonight? Over here in Houston.
There he's in Houston over there, our reliable. Bernadine's sick tonight under the weather, so she won't be joining us, but we have our guest lined up. I just want to welcome him, Russ Kellett. He's been with us a couple of other times. He is an alien abductee. He is an abduction survivor, and he has an incredible tale, which the last time we had him on, we lost a lot of the time. So he's going to be on for until the very end tonight, whole show. So, Russ, I know you're there. So let me just say hi to you and meet my co-host, Pete Haviland. You guys have never talked.
Hi there, Pete.
Hey, how are you doing, Russ? Glad that you're on tonight.
Thank you.
So, Russ, Pete's never heard. We've given him background on you and you know, we don't know how many times. We don't want to continue to ask you to tell your story over and over because I know you've been, you know, you're tired of it, but you're back on the show. So can you bring us up to speed on just, you know, how this happened in your life and then we can go on to where you're at now?
Yeah. To be quite honest, it was an accumulation of things that that started when I was a child, when I was about 4 years old. When I first saw something strange, which was in my grandparents' bedroom. And I'd been upstairs looking for Christmas presents because, like all kids know, that, you know, Christmas presents are usually kept around the house somewhere. And I'd been looking for some Christmas presents in this bedroom. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I turned around and I could hear this noise. And I went to the window and I could only describe what I saw was, at first I thought it was the dustbin man because it was somebody wearing like a grey silver like suit, like overalls, and this helmet. And behind him there was like this silver object, which I thought was the dustbin van at first. And my mum and my grandma were shouting, you know, are you upstairs, Russell? And I knew I shouldn't have been in the bedroom. And I shouted, oh, I'm in the bathroom. And I looked and I looked out of the window and I waved at this person. And he looked and he put his hand up. And then I looked again, and he seemed to go around behind this silver-like object. And then the next thing, it shot up into the air sort of thing. And I was looking all around, you know, sort of like in disbelief of where this thing had gone and where this person had gone. And then my mum and my grandma were shouting again. So I went into the bathroom and then I came out of the bathroom and, you know, sort of like went downstairs. So that was something what always stuck in my mind, that, you know, there was this, like, I suppose in a way it was some kind of like a spaceman type with his helmet off and this silver, like, craft sort of thing. So that was like, I must have been only about 4 years old when that happened. And then I remember my dad coming in from work and he used to work nights and he was a carpet weaver. And he came in and he was telling my mum a story about when he'd been outside with his brothers because there was a few brothers that worked at this this big weaving factory. And he'd said that they were on a tea break and that one of them had shouted over. And when my dad looked around, they said, did you see that? And my dad said, no, what was it? And they said, well, it was like a torpedo in the sky. Okay. And my dad was always, you know, sort of like annoyed that he hadn't seen this, you know, but because he had his back turned to it, but his brothers and a couple of his workmates had seen it, you know. And, you know, that sort of like inspired me because obviously talking about UFOs, you know, and there was a lot of things, you know, programs coming around at that time on the telly about UFOs and about strange things, you know. So that sort of like got me a little bit interested. And as time went on, up until my teens, I was very, very interested in the subject of UFOs. In fact, before I left school, me and a friend went to a meeting, and we'd spent, you know, as pocket money to go to this meeting, and it was about back in them days, it was in the sort of like 1979, it was like 50 pence or like, you know, 50 cents to get in to this meeting, which didn't seem a lot to, you know, most people at the time, but it was a bit of money, if you know what I mean, for a young kid back then. So we got in, and this group was talking about UFOs and but we wasn't getting, how can I put it, we wasn't getting any closer to finding answers. What we was getting was, you know, basically join the group for £5 or like $5 and you know, you'll get a newsletter, you know, maybe two newsletters a year, you know. And so it was more, how can I put it? We felt a little bit like, because we wasn't, you know, adults, we felt that we were a little bit like left out, if you see what I mean. But nevertheless, you know, we enjoyed the evening, but we didn't come away with any answers. You know, and unlike today, back then, you know, there was not as much, you know, say visual evidence, you know, like, you know, film footage or videotape footage. So it was a bit of a disappointment for us, you know, but I was still looking, you know, for answers to this question, you know, sort of like, are we alone, you know, out in the universe? And so, you know, that's where I was at that point, sort of like my teens. Then there was something very bizarre that happened where we used to go to this area about maybe 6 or 7 blocks away from where we lived. And there was an old house in some grounds where there was like a couple of acres and trees, you know. And I had this strange occurrence that when I'd gone on and was finding my way into the den, what we'd made, you know, as like young lads, you know, we'd made this den, and there was, we'd basically got this chair, we'd salvaged a chair from a bonfire night, what we was having, and a settee, and that was in this in this like den what we had, you know. And it was somewhere where we'd maybe go after school and what have you on a night time and do what lads normally do. We had, you know, cigarettes, and we might even have a bottle of beer, and, you know, sort of like, and magazines and stuff, you know, like try to grow up, if you see what I mean. And that evening I'd gone across, but there was nobody around. And some of my friends had moved out of the area. One of the other friends, he'd started hanging around with somebody from a few blocks away, and we'd fallen out. One of my friends was wanting to go to university, so we were really studying. So there was me by myself, really. And I've gone into this den, and this very strange thing happened where there was a light in the sky, and it was really, really, you know, a bright light above the trees. And then all of a sudden, there was like an hurricane, a wind that came around and started moving the trees and really shaking the trees. Okay. And, you know, sort of like I had missing time. When I got in from this, when this happened, I felt a little bit sort of like disconnected. And I walked home. And when I got home, you know, my grandma had said, you know, when you've got tea ready, you know, you should come when the tea's out. You know what time you have your tea. You know, don't mess about and, you know, have your mum to sort of like make you something else. And I couldn't understand this because to me it was a normal time, if you see what I mean. But there were a couple of hours difference, you know. Right. Instead of being like 4 o'clock, it was something like 6 o'clock and after. So I wasn't I wasn't a favourite person, you know, that sort of like that Saturday afternoon, you know. So these are just the little things that started happening, you know. And then what happened after that? I got a motorbike. I was 16, and I got this motorbike, and I started, you know, sort of like going out, and I had a job. I'd just left school, but I had a job, and what happened was that I realised that when I'd been out, I'd come across something very strange in the middle of the road, and it was like, you know, like a tunnel, you know, you drive like through tunnels, you know, like to go across, you know, waterways, etc., you know. Right. And come to this tunnel and basically ended up in a room where I was put in like this chair and elevated back. And they had a tube put down my throat and this helmet put on. And then the helmet was taken off, you know, this tube taken out. I'd had this, before that, I'd had this injection sort of like almost in the centre of me neck. And there was these very tall, like humanoid creatures with bald heads. And they must have been about 10 foot tall. And, you know, sort of like I was very, very scared, to say the least. And I found myself in, I could almost call it something like a stadium. And in this stadium, there's hundreds of people. And
You mean like a teaching stadium, like a you know, when the doctors have when they're showing operations, it's like a, you know, people sitting around and watching the surgery.
No, it was more like you know, a football stadium.
Oh, okay. Wow, that big.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
And was in a stadium and was watching it. We had like an helmet on, and, you know, an helmet put on, and with this visor, and you could see things out of the visor. Okay. And was watching scenarios of what I would say like battle skills. Basically, battle skills, weapons training, and you know how to use a weapon, etc. And so you were
being trained as you were being they were doing these procedures on you.
Yeah.
Wow.
They put this injection to the back of me. And then they put this tube down my throat, and this helmet basically went over the top, you know, of the array. Okay. And so whilst that's on, I calmed down because I was panicking at first, obviously, not panicking.
Okay.
And then, you know, sort of like I was watching all this and sort of like, just remembering what we'd been taught, more or less, you know, and there was the weapons, how to use the weapons, what type of weapons we had, and then there was the different enemies.
What kind of enemies were they showing you, if you remember?
There was like three races of what we call dragon people, or like reptiles. There was
like reptilians that they talk about.
Yeah, like reptiles, very tall. You know, 10 foot tall and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like half human and half reptiles. Okay. So there's one, and it was sort of like a greeny, sort of like reddy color. Then the other one was a blue color. And then the other one was sort of like a whitey grey colour.
Okay.
So these were the three main ones at the time. And then what it came up with then, and it says allies. So allies of these aliens, their images came up. Okay. And was sort of like some of them were more like human, you know, Eastern Europeans. There was something, a race like what you would call Asian, an African race, and it was their allies.
Okay.
Then the next thing, that's what was like the first thing that happened.
Okay.
So that was like the first time it happened. There was just like three and their allies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then the next thing, you know, I was back on my motorbike, you know, riding back down the road thinking, you know, what's just happened? You know, it was just like a dream.
Right.
I got in. And I was late in, and the sort of like next day, you know, my mum had a word with me, and she said, you know, like if you're going out on your motorbike, you want to come in at a reasonable hour, especially when you've got work the next morning.
Right.
So this happened maybe in a year, you know. On a number of occasions, the same thing had happened. I'd been riding down a road, and this tunnel had turned up in the middle of the road, and then the same thing happened. I'd be in this chair. I was like naked. There was this funny smell, and I had this this thing put down my throat and this helmet on. And I was, like I say, watching, you know, this in this arena, watching and going through something different the next time. You know, there'd be sort of like it'd gone from basic battle skills to more advanced battle skills and techniques. So, and you know, I'm thinking, you know, am I going crazy? You know?
Right.
It's very hard to explain to somebody, you know.
Did they ever give you any indication or about when this battle's supposed to be taking place or where it's supposed to be taking place?
No, not at that time. Because this, basically, as I found out, was like a simulation.
Okay.
This was training This was like an exercise.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay.
So it went
they were
on.
They were just giving you some different scenarios to see how you would react.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
So it went from that then to other things happening. Like, for instance, I went on my motorbike then. I'd got a scooter. I had a scooter later on. And the same thing happened on my scooter. And I sees this tunnel again, and I'm thinking, oh, I don't want to be going down that tunnel. So I've got my brakes on. I've got my foot brake on. I've got my hand brake on the actual, what do you call it, on the handlebars. And I'm pulling so hard that it snapped the cable.
Wow.
Because I was determined that I was not going to be going down this tunnel again. Because to be quite honest, it's not a nice feeling. You know,
Doesn't sound like it was.
You know, I mean, I was panic stricken and I'm thinking, not again. Anyway, so ended up going down this damn tunnel again. This time, there's a little bit of difference.
Okay. What was the difference?
This time, from when the helmet's on, and, you know, I've had this tube put down and it's come off. This time, I'm in this massive big hall, and it's like a drill hall, and there's people walking around, and we're given this suit. We've got this suit what we put on, and over in these like lockers, and you put this suit on, and it's like very light material, almost like a lace curtain, you know. And as soon as you put it on, it more or less fastens on its own, a bit like Velcro, but it's not Velcro. And there's a dial. You turn this dial, and it goes from the white color, what it is, and it changes, goes through these colors until it's black. And so I've got this suit on, and there's like boots on. Oh, it's like all in one. So it's like when you've got it on and you've turned this dial and it's all black and you've got like boots that are at the bottom. So, you know, it really quite amazing, you know, and when you've got it on, it feels absolutely amazing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got this on, and then we've got these weapons, and basically we know how to use a weapon. And there's like a magazine, but it's not a magazine. It's a power unit, which basically turns, it puts power into this, what you would call a sound weapon. And there's a dial, and you turn the dial.
Right.
And it goes from 0 to 10.
Okay.
So once that's in, you've got to then initiate, turn it on, you know, for the power to charge the actual rifle. And there's like at the side there's these clips, so you've got like three different what looks like magazines, these slots. Those are your spare batteries, you know, when you run out of the charge that basically fires a weapon, you take it out, you put it in the slot, and you put another magazine in, or power supply battery, that is. So you've got this weapon, but you've got to put an helmet on. You've got to have an helmet on before you fire the weapon, because a weapon, what it does is it'll burst your eardrums, right? Yeah. And I had an accident, and I ended up having like loss of hearing in my right ear for all this, and I have problems now with this. So, you know, we've got these weapons, we've got this uniform, we've got this helmet. Later on, we get sidearms. And then later on, the weapons change. It goes from a sound weapon to a sound weapon with a laser cannon as well incorporated. and then a sidearm like a pistol. So we've got all these, and we put into this unit, and basically we're told that we're going to be going to fight mission. And what happens is the coordinates come up on the visor in the helmet, and we're taken to wherever, you know, the mission was at the time.
Okay.
And we get the enemy, the image of the enemy comes up, the location, etc. And their allies, and I'll tell you, whoever you'll be fighting, you know, sort of like on what planet, etc. So,
did they ever cover with you how they chose you to be assessed for this?
No, there wasn't much communication at the first point of contact.
Okay.
And later on, you know, we do talk.
Okay.
But, I mean, I've had all sorts of things I've been told. I've been told, it's me, it's limitless. But I've been told from other people that's never had this happen to them, that, you've agreed to this, you know, before this happened to you. You know, another point of your life or on a different planet. How these people can tell me that when it's never happened to them, I don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? But you get these people, you know?
Right.
There is some strange factors. Like my mum, she was rhesus positive.
Okay.
Now, I know that there's a big thing about rhesus negative, but rhesus positive is the one where you cannot take rhesus negative blood, but rhesus negative can take positive blood.
Okay.
So the other thing is that they're not sure where the rhesus blood group comes from, that there's apparently there's only one race on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Celts, a group of Celts or Basques, I think, come from Spain and Portugal that have this blood group more than anybody else around the world, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know. I'm, you know, sort of like this is just looking through my family history, my mum's blood group and what have you. But I wasn't told exactly why. Is it my genes? Is it blood group? Is it something else? Is it something that, you know, this is a big question. You know, this is, you know, this is a big question.
Right.
So basically, we've put into this unit, and we go to, you know, on a mission, and we're attacking these bases and these aliens.
Right.
And then, you know, sort of like we come back, and the next thing, after all this has happened, I'm back on my motorbike or my scooter, traveling home again.
Wow.
So...
so how long did these sessions last? That do you remember?
Well, only going from people in my family that have told me that, you know, I went out on my motorbike and it was maybe say 8 o'clock, and I'd be coming in at something like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh wow.
Now, when I'd set off from my friend's home, I distinctly said to him that I better set off now. You know, I've got work in the morning, and it was something like, you know, after 11 o'clock at night. So it should have only taken me 3/4 of an hour to get home. Right.
Okay.
Call it an hour. So that would be 12 o'clock. But yeah, right. I'm coming in at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And sometimes later. So there's like two and a half and 3 hours discrepancy in the time when I set off to when I actually got home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no explanation for it. You know?
Have you ever gone to a hypnotist, hypnotherapist to try to recover that lost time to get any more?
I did years ago.
Okay.
Years ago.
And what did you recover? Do you remember?
Yeah, basically, I'm talking about the things. What I'm talking about now.
Okay. So these are your memories that were recovered through from hypnosis.
No, because I remembered them in the first place. I didn't really need.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm sorry. I was confused. Okay. Okay. So you're remembering this through free thought. You're not. This wasn't anything that you went through a session on.
No. It's both. Okay. Like I say, I remember it like it was yesterday. But, gotcha. Somebody that I knew, he turned around and said, you know, I'm a regression therapist. I'll take you back. And to be quite honest, there was more or less the same thing said, that these things are taking me. And, you know, it felt really odd. It felt really odd that it didn't feel like it was me talking, you know, when I was regressed. You know, it was really bizarre.
Well, let me ask you this. When they regressed you, did at any point in time, did you go back to a different life maybe as an abductee? Or, were there any past lives that you went through this as well that you can remember?
No, it was, you know, the questions that I was asked were really to do with, you know, sort of going missing and being abducted.
Okay.
So, like I said, the thing is, so this was happening, you know, sort of like it started to be a regular occurrence.
Okay.
When you say
regular, I mean, how often was it happening now?
Oh, you know, maybe in 6 months that had happened, maybe 2-3 times in 6 months.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty regular.
Yeah. So then I went from a motorbike and I got a scooter. Then I got another a scooter, and the things were happening the same. And then I got a motorbike. I decided to get a motorbike again. Mm-hmm. And it started again. In fact, what happened was like something out of Close Encounters. I were at a level crossing, waiting mm-hmm. for a train to pass. These barriers, these lights had come down, or were coming down, and I stopped. And then I was waiting for the train to go past. But the funny thing is, I can never remember the train going past. I just remember these lights coming down. Anyway, I was hit by a beam of light. And I looked around, and I'm looking all over from where this light was, because I could feel the heat on my back. And I looked around because I thought it was a wagon, a truck or something, you know, sort of like getting a little bit close behind me. I looked around, there was nothing there, nobody there. And then I looked up because I noticed that on my petrol tank, I had dials, an alley tank and what have you, and there were my speedometer and it was chrome. And I noticed that the light was shining down. So I looked up and then I felt like I was floating. And then the next thing, I was back down on my bike, looking around. The light had gone out, and there were these lights going up into the sky, or going up, whether there were the barriers that had gone up. And I looked around and I thought, I better continue on my way home, you know, because right. I'm sat in the middle of the road, I'm going to get knocked off my bike here. So I carried right. on. Home, and on the way home, on this long road, there's like a place called the Flappy where we used to go motorbike trail riding, you know.
Okay.
This right. this big land, this expanse, where there's like a quarry and what have you. The other side, there's like farm buildings and farmland, you know, and this ball of light was following me. And they were getting closer. It was going over trees, and it's getting closer, and it's going over fields mm-hmm. until it more or less were at the side of me, and then it flew across the road in front okay. of me and went straight across the road, you know, to an right. area, you know, that I knew, the next town. And so I pulled over, and I used to smoke them. And it was only a cig, it was nothing exotic. Right. So I pulled over and I'm watching this ball of light, and it was very big. It was as big as a big sort of like 4x4 vehicle, you know. And I more or less watched it for 10, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I thought, right, I better get home because I've got work the next morning.
Right.
So carries on. Gets home, my dog come to the door, I opened the door, dog came out, went to the toilet and what have you, so I goes in, locked the door, and I put the kettle on for a coffee, and mm-hmm. I looked at the time, and I thought, what time is it, you know, and again, it was going on for 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, I've been at my friend's, uh-huh. I've been in my friend's house.
Right.
He was like a martial arts instructor, and he did the acupuncture.
Okay. And
I think I'd set off at about, again, the same time, 11 o'clock.
Right.
So 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. So there's 2 hours different, you know, in
right.
the time. Difference of you know, when I'd got in and when I should have got in.
Right.
The next morning I could hear my mum, and she shouted, "Russ Kelly," she says, "you know, you want to come in at a reasonable hour," she says, "when you've got work the next morning, lad," she says, "you can't burn the candle at both ends, you know."
Right.
That won't be mum, you know. So anyway,
sounds like my mom telling me the same thing.
Yeah, she was right, you know. Anyway, so I get up, typical lad, straight out, you know, sort of like my dog went into the garden and what have you, got her back in the house, and on my way to work. No sooner as I've got in to work and taken my crash helmet off, okay. one of the lads, I used to work with 150 women.
Okay.
And one of the women came up to us, and she said, "Russ, have you seen your face?" And I said, "Have you seen yours?" She said, "I'm being serious." She says, "Have you seen it?" I said, "Go away." And she said, "No, I'm being." She said, "What have you been doing? Have you overdone it on the sunbed?" I said, "What are you talking about?" And she says, "Well," she says, "your face. Where my crash helmet had been, I had an half-face crash helmet. It okay. was like red, you know, and it was red, you know." She said, "Go have a look in a mirror," she says, "and you'll see what I'm talking about." So there were a mirror in my office, and sort of like, anyway, so I had a look, and, you know, it was red. And so all day I had all the lasses and the women laughing, you know, when I was working, going past you know, these stations where they worked and what have you. So I had all that going on for most of the day. I went home and my parents came in with my sister. And my grandma said to me, "What have you been doing?" And I said, "How do you mean, what have I been doing?" And they said, "Well, your face. You know, look at your face. It's like red raw, you know."
Right.
Anyway, to cut a long story short, I was not well the day after. And the day after, I was really, really not well, you know.
You think it was radiation?
Well, I got asked a question, and that was, do I work with any radioactive materials?
Right.
The doctor did ask me, you know.
Right.
Where do you work, Mr. Kelly? You know, do you work with radioactive materials, or have you got any allergies to anything? And I said, no, not that at all, you know. Anyway, so this was an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. It was an ongoing thing because it lasted for months. You know, I seemed to be, you know, sort of like not really that well. You know, I wasn't myself and sort of like, and I had this feeling that, you know, just very drained of energy, to say the least. So as time went on, I did feel a little bit better and what have you, you know. And I've got another motorbike and another chopper, but something really fast. And I was looking forward to getting it on the road and everything. And got it on the road and going out, and then something really odd happened. Well, something else odd happened. And that is that I'd come in, I was listening to some music, I was laid on my bed in my bedroom, the door was ajar, and the bedroom wall, the gable end of the house, the wall turned black, and these humanoid creatures, like shadows, walked through the wall and came in my bedroom. And one of them started talking to me and showing me things, and they were like, I was seeing things basically, like through a television, but the sound was sort of like out of sync.
Okay.
If you see what I mean, it was sort of like out of sync. And they were telling me things. And I remember saying, "No, I'm not going to do that." "Oh, yeah, you will." "No, I'm not going to do that." "Oh, but you'll have to." "But no, I'm not going to do that." And my sister was coming up to the bathroom. She turned the light on.
Mm-hmm.
And these things turned around and walked back through the wall again. So I'm talking to these things, and my sister says, she shouts, "Russ, who are you talking to?" And I said, "Oh, these." I said, "I'm telling them to get away. I'm sick of them now." And she says, "You're talking to who?" And I said, "These." I said, "They've just gone now through the wall, I've told them." And she said, "Oh, hell." So she went to the bathroom. And she went downstairs,
mm-hmm.
and she was telling me mum and me dad. She said, "There's somewhat not right up there." She said, "Without us," she says, "he's talking to somebody. He's just walked through a wall." We said, "How do you mean?" And she said, "He's there talking to somebody. I've asked him who he's talking to, and I'm talking to these in my bedroom." And she said, "Well, what happened?" "Oh, they've walked through a wall." So, anyway, to cut a long story short, I was really ill. I was taken really ill that night. And I've got it written down, and it was when the night when Stormy Norman Schwarzkopf took you away, right? Yeah. Private second or the fourth, it was. And it were on television, and I came downstairs, and I was in a mess. And I was shaking. I was being sick. And what happened was that I had to go to doctors. And I had tests done and what have you. And, I mean, I'm a big lad now. I mean, I put weight on. But, I mean, I was basically pretty fit, you know, and active. But I lost 5 stone within a month. Right, yeah.
Wow.
His sister went on to the doctor's surgery.
Right.
Say again, sorry?
No, we're saying, right? We hear you.
Yeah, so my sister went on to the same doctor as what I had. And he gave her this slip of paper. And he says, Russ Kelly, is that your husband? And she said, no. She said, it's my brother. And he said, oh, well, can you give him this? He's got to be admitted into hospital tonight. So my sister came home and she says to my mum and dad, I've got a slip here. And she says, doctor said that I've got to give him this, and there's a telephone number. I've got to ring the hospital because I'm supposed to be admitted into hospital tonight. Right, yeah. So anyway, me dad had rung up, my mum and my dad rung up for hospital, and there was help to pay because they couldn't understand that why somebody else had been given my details and why the doctor hadn't sorted the transport out for me to go and to be admitted into hospital that night. And anyway, so I went in. And I was in that night, and basically, as I say to people, or as I have said in the past, I escaped. I came home. I rung up and said, look, I want to come home. I don't want to stay here. Somebody died in the same room. So anyway, my dad brought me home. So I came back home. And I was just in a mess, you know. I was in a mess, and what happened was I kept on having to go in and out of hospital. Then I was, you know, what you call outpatient. So I was like taken as outpatient instead. So anyway. I was going for body scans, brain scans, and everything. And two of the doctors at the hospital said something a little bit strange. One of them said to the other one, he says, if I didn't know any better, I swear they had space sickness.
Space sickness?
So, space sickness, yeah.
Wow.
So
did they find any implants or any scars or any operations or anything that might have been done to you that you weren't that you didn't know about?
No. The only implants I had taken out 2 years ago, which were in my ears, my eyes, and my nose. And I have problems with now. I have major problems at the moment with my right eye and my right ear. But that was after I had implants taken out. In this very room. So anyway, what happened was that things came back to say that I had an enlarged liver. Then I had a problem with my kidney and my white corpuscles, my blood those problems with my white corpuscles. And then I was sent to a hospital and I went to a specialist and they did the other tests and they said that I had something called ME.
What's that? Hello.
Fibromyalgia, myalgia encephalitis.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I think in America, they call it, there's other names for it, chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah, they're using fibromyalgia mostly, yeah. Yeah, so I know what you're talking about now.
But originally, it was called ME, myalgia encephalitis, I think it was. Basically, to say that I had this swelling on my brain, you know.
Mm.
So, you know, all of this is, you know, sort of like after this light, you know, hits me on my motorbike and then the things walk through the wall and then I'm going through these tunnels and what have you. So, you know, having all this going on.
Right.
You know, sort of like I'm becoming, from somebody that used to do a lot of training, you know, and martial arts training to somebody right. who's, you know, basically a babbling wreck.
Mm.
You know? So I did come round a little bit after this happened, you know, and started trying to train again, etc. But I was just getting nowhere, you know. I'm just not well at all. You know, couldn't lift things what I used to. I used to be able to lift weights and I was just feeling like drained all the time.
Go ahead, Pete. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Russ, I know you, you know, I follow you on Facebook and I know you have a lot of detractors, a lot of people who don't believe you. And who you've told us in the past have stolen your stories and, you know, your accounts of this and turned it into other things. Are you still dealing with that? And how do you feel about that?
To be quite honest, everybody gets it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Realistically, you know, I mean, I've been talking to, I won't say who they are, but one or two people that are well-known abductees, you know, mm-hmm. said Russ, you know, it goes with the territory. If you're going to be talking about this stuff, you know, you're going to get it.
Right.
The only difference is that I'm getting a lot of, like, attacks from people that don't even know me, you know, right. sort of like, that have never met me. Right. And because I've stuck up for other people in this subject, so you know it's one of these things where it's really, to be honest, it's an handful of people. Right. It's an handful of people, and mm-hmm. one person who is actually insane, who's you know. It must be terrible to have a mental illness, but it's somebody with a mental illness who's an ex-druggie. And right. I don't know, if you look at the person's profile, if you looked right. at that person's profile, you would not want to be in the room with the person,
right.
to be honest.
Right.
It's sad, you know. So you just...
go ahead.
The other thing is, because of my research as well, because, I mean, not only was this happening, but mm-hmm. I started going out and filming. I've got, you know, videos of me being zapped by things when I've been filming UFOs. You right. know, I've filmed flying men, I've filmed dolphins, I've filmed flying triangles coming out of the sea where I live here. Now, right. you know, the question has to be asked, how come? You know, is it coincidence? And it's not coincidence. You know, it's like, obviously, there's something going on. Somebody said that our, what was the word now? a beacon for these things to, you know, sort of like to be around, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So obviously, if I am being abducted and all this is going off, these mm-hmm. things are going to be around me. All the evidence is there in front of people.
Right.
You know, I filmed these things, and not only have I filmed them, I used to deal with somebody who was an expert witness, so could go to court, and he used to look at my images. Most of the time, he couldn't tell me what they were, but he could tell me what there wasn't. He could tell me there wasn't aircraft, you know, like balloons.
Right.
You know, and, you know, so...
Well, let me ask you this: why come out and say anything if you knew that, you know, people would come after you? I mean, what are you trying to share with folks, or what are you trying to tell folks about what your experiences are?
Well, I didn't think, you know, sort of like I didn't think, you know,
okay.
I was just telling people, look, you know, I was asking questions. Originally, I started up a group back in the 90s,
okay.
wanting answers. That's mm-hmm. all I was doing, you know, sort of like looking for answers.
Okay.
And, you know, basically, I think I spent too many years, you know, looking for answers, wasting my time with people that weren't worth bothering with, you know, sort okay. of like, you know, and with people that... most of them are jealous that if something's happened to you, they can't right. comprehend it, or they can comprehend it, but they're wanting, you know, it's like, why are you so special? I've never, ever said I was special.
Right.
But you get people that will ask you this, why are you so special? I'm not. I'm just unfortunate that I've been at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right.
You know, so it seems that people... what I would call jealous that things haven't happened to them. But to be honest, you know, if it had happened to them, they wouldn't be jealous. That isn't, right. You wouldn't be jealous because it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been a fun trip, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons mm-hmm. is that, you know, you're dealing with people that are supposed to be talking and friends with you, you're sharing information, you're sharing videos with magazines and stuff, only to right. find out that the person that is the editor of the magazine is talking behind your back.
Right.
You know, he's telling TV companies that your footage is no mm-hmm. more than hand gliders and what have you. And this is somebody who wants your footage to sell it on.
Right.
Right. You know?
So, I mean, like, when you find out that, what the hell's happening? What's going on?
Right.
You know?
Well, what have you learned so far with everything that's been happening with you? What are your thoughts on the reasons why they abduct people?
Because there's something going on which is even more mind-blowing than just me being abducted. And, you know, we're putting... a military unit with soldiers, and we're fighting a war with more than 10 races of aliens
right.
on all the planets. And mm-hmm. there is mining going on for precious metals. You know, there's people being taken from this planet. We know for certain. Mm-hmm. In my country alone, there's something right. like... 200,000 people go missing, and I live on an island.
That's right.
Right.
So where are all the people going? You know, ask yourself that. Where right. are all these people going? And sort of like on different continents where uh-huh. you've got billions of people, you know, you've got the same problem. People are going missing. Where are all these people going? And yeah. there's only one explanation, that somebody is taking them. And there must be, you know, as far as I know, from what I've seen, that they're working on other planets, and the slaves, and that's all there is to it. But you know, who's going to listen to? Who's going to? Oh, yeah,
right.
There's right. wars going on, you know, in the universe, on different planets, and on this planet as well. You know, because the aliens are not only fighting with, like, the people that they've abducted, but each
right.
each country, right? Yeah. If you said that there's at least maybe four races of aliens working mm-hmm. alongside a country.
Right.
Right, yeah. And say, like, for instance, America, Canada, and Russia, you might have, you know, two different aliens working for two different parts of one country. People that know that they exist and, you know, different parts of the government, if you see what I mean. So there's conflict there. It could be conflict there. You know, I mean, it's just, when you think about it, it's just mind-blowing. It really is.
You know, over here in the United States, you know, we have Area 51. Is there anything over there in the UK that that is anything equivalent to that? Like, you know, because I know that folks think Area 51 is either where they do the reverse engineering, or there might even be some lower levels with aliens there to do research with the government. Is there something over there in the UK that's something equivalent to that, or is that it?
Yeah. I mean, we had a rocket facility in this country. Before America, during the Second World War, when we had to give sovereignty up, there was a rocket facility, much like the NASA project, up on the west coast of England. You know, up in Scotland, there's places down in Wiltshire, around that area, where there's underground military facilities, and in Wales. You know, I mean, there's quite a number of places where, yeah, you know, there's a hell of a lot goes on, and most of it is secret, top secret.
Right. Well, I know that over there in the UK that they released a lot of information on UFOs, and I know over here they still toe the line that there are no UFOs. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on what has been released over there? Has it been helpful? And do you ever think that they're going to release any information over here?
It's disinformation. Disinformation, right. And I can prove it, and that is I've got most of the reports that were released for the years.
Okay,
right. Okay, from the MOD Air Staff, Air Staff 2A1, I think it was. Now the problem is that the person that won that desk came out on television and said that he told the people working under him, right? Yeah, in that department. Not to create a paper trail, right? Yeah, this was on the UFO Hunters series. Right. Turned around and said that he told this staff not to create a paper trail, right? Yeah. So what that means is that if me and say like a group of us here, say there's 10 of us, we write to that department, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
And inform you. Mm-hmm. Of a UFO landing or a UFO sighting. So you've got 10 reports coming to you.
Okay.
What he said then is that his staff cannot create a paper trail. They can't write back to us. Right, yeah? Because there's a paper trail, right, yeah? So
So if there's no trail, it's easier to say that they never got it or whatever they want to say.
Yeah. So the problem is this, out of the reports what we've got, which might be 300, 350 in one year, 300 the next year, 250 the next year, right, yeah?
Right.
So that's reports that they've released, right, yeah? How do we know? Because there's nobody's name on those,
right,
yeah? There's nobody's name on those reports. It just tells you a location, a time, and the objects, you know, basically say the shape, right, yeah,
okay,
etc. So how do we know that they're true reports? Because I've already said that can't create a paper trail, so how do we know that they're real reports? The question is,
gotcha,
if there's 300 in a year, how do we know that there was only 300? There might have been 400, there might have been 500, there might have been 600. So
gotcha,
because that person has admitted, he's admitted, I've got the video of him saying this, it's unbelievable. So we don't know whether there's more or less. So we don't know whether the ones that was released are true.
Okay. Okay, so they're releasing stuff, but they're not giving you they're not really giving you any data other than just it's A, B, and C, and that's it. So you're kind of looking at it going, what the hell is this? I mean, I got you. I understand now. Okay.
The other thing is, we've got people that are part of groups like mine, like myself, right, yeah?
Right.
Asking the question, and that is, how comes in this year when you've released this document for that year, say like 1995, when I submitted to that department a report, right, yeah, and it's not on. If I have a look where I lived at the time and where that was reported, how comes that report isn't on the report for that year? Right, yeah?
Okay.
So then you get other people in groups looking and saying, hang on, well, we reported something in that year, but a different date, and we can't find ours. And then somebody else in another group says, well, wait a minute, I can't find mine there. And then somebody who was not in a group but has reported it, who's interested, they get a copy, and they go, well, wait a minute, I can't find mine either. So all these people around the country are asking the question, how comes out of these reports that you've released, how comes that the reports that we wrote to you, and sometimes they wouldn't have only wrote to them, they might have sent video footage, right, yeah? They might have sent a videotape. They might have sent photographic evidence, right, yeah?
Okay.
How comes that our reports are not in this year's report for that year?
Right. Let me ask you this too. What are your thoughts on the crop circles that I know that there's a lot of them that show up over there? What do you think they are? Do you think it's communication, and how do you think they're made?
To be quite honest, I've looked into the subject on the peripheral and never really, how can I put it?
Okay.
Because I had so much going on and so many UFO sightings, and I was out with a camera filming, it became something that it became a bit of a non-entity.
I got you.
If you see what I mean.
No, I understand completely. Well, do you look into other people's cases? Do they contact you for that?
Well, hell yeah. And that was one of the reasons why I set the group up in the first place.
Okay.
Because I was looking to find out, you know, what had happened to me. And I was trying to find information to see if anybody had had the same kind of things happen to them, had reported the same type of craft as me, etc.
And have you found anybody that has reported anything similar to what you've been going through?
Yeah, similar. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's all taken 30 years. It's taken 30 years.
Right.
And we're still not 100%. Because what we seem to be getting is we seem to be getting people that have watched maybe television and films and are wanting to be part of that and are just churning out the same old,
right?
Wanting to be special, wanting to be so. You know what we've got to try to do is we've got to try to get past this,
right?
You know, we've got to try and get past it,
right? Have you dealt with any cattle mutilations over there, or animal mutilations, or human mutilations that you know of?
Yeah, a couple. And to be quite honest, it's something that how can I put it? Because of going out filming, it's a little bit like the crop circles. I mean, we had big cats as well. These big cats what were seen. You know, you can only do... The problem is, if you take your eye off the ball, that's it. It's gone. So I decided, look, you know, it's like stick to one thing, you know. Stick to the UFO reports and the reports of spacecraft and aliens, rather than chasing around looking for other things, you know.
Have you come across anybody else that has had any communications with any aliens, and what type?
Oh yeah. Over the years, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about thousands of people,
right?
I'm not talking about thousands or even hundreds.
Right.
But, you know, maybe, you know, 20, 30 people.
That's still a significant number.
It is.
Yeah.
It certainly is, yeah. And, you know, different types of spacecraft, you know. I mean, we was a group what wasn't that big. But we looked at what we did. We tried to do the best, you know, that we could do with our resources.
Right.
You know.
Have you seen some of the same aircraft or spacecraft that have been in different cases outside of yours? I mean, could you, or is there any way to see if it might be even the same aliens? Is there any way to do that?
Well, yeah, basically, if you put the descriptions of what people have seen next to what I've seen and what my friends see, I mean, to be quite honest, you can see, because most of the craft that I've seen are filmed. So if you have a look on Flying Saucer, what is it now? Flying Saucer Television on YouTube, I've put a lot of, you know, our video footage up there for people to see. But what you'll always get is you'll always get people that will, it's like anything else. Yeah, again, you'll have people saying it's rubbish, out of focus, you know, blurry, this, that, and the other. But the funny thing is, they can say out of focus, blurry, they can say all sorts of things. But we have the Navy release a film, and all of a sudden you get the people there, the brown nose, oh, amazing footage, and it's some of the worst footage I've ever seen. You can't tell what the object is. You don't know who the, you know, it could be anybody, it could be anybody, anyone or anybody, you know. But because it's somebody who's come forward, who's supposed to be in the, you know, the United States Air Force, it's the best thing since sliced bread. You know what I mean? And you think to yourself, well, look, you can't even see anything. You know what I mean? It looks like it's shot in the dark. It's, you know, just abysmal. But yet you get people praising it because, you know, somebody will be showing it, you can guarantee that one of the big conferences in America, and it'll be wow, you know, sort of like this is best cockpit footage, you know what I mean? And it'll get bums on seats. So yeah, it sells. It sells. Where you get something that I've filmed and you can look at it and it's daytime and you can go, what the hell's that? But you know what? Right. I won't even get a look in.
Have you come across any MIBs? I know they talk about them a lot here in the States.
Men in Black.
Men in Black.
Yeah, I've come across. In investigations, I've come across a couple. And
Well, tell us about it. Tell us about it.
Well, to be quite honest, I personally think, you know, that they're definitely there to purposely put the, the fear of God up people.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, they do that pretty well.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. It's an exercise in trying to frighten people. I mean, I've been told all sorts. I've been told that, you know, sort of like, if I say anything, I'm a dead man, and, you know, sort of like, we'll get to your family. You know, you try getting at my family, and there will be a dead person. It won't be me, you know.
So have you been threatened by anybody with all this information coming out?
The thing is, it's easier to threaten people over a phone, isn't it?
People are 9 foot tall and bulletproof behind a keyboard.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you try it. You know, I mean, I'm knackered, I'm old, I'm getting on and sort of like bust up and what have you. You know, but sort of like try it.
If you I haven't heard the word knackered in so long. I'm an Anglophile, so I know what that means. You're not that old.
Oh, believe me, I feel it. Yeah, I'm ready for the knacker's yard. Believe me.
Well, but, what are your thoughts on black-eyed kids? Do you think that they have anything to do with aliens, or do you think that they're just made up?
You can get people and get in the right light and the camera, you know, and your eyes will look black, you know.
Gotcha.
It's just one of those things that cameras have an habit of doing, especially, you know, some of the new cameras what we've got.
Right.
Feel me.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this is I think there's a lot of things that's put out there to take your eye off the ball, like the crop circles, you know, the mutilations. I think a lot of this has been purposely done to stop you looking at what's really going on.
So basically, look over here, and then you got everything going on the left.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, I mean, I've seen things, you know, I've seen flying saucers landed, you know, I've seen flying triangles come out of the sea and take off, you know, sort of like things like flying men, you know, sort of like, but weren't flying, they looked like flying men, but they were basically triangles. And that seems to be a problem. That seems to be a problem because there is one race of aliens that do have triangular shaped craft. But other countries around the world seem to have their technology. And hear people saying it's TR3 Summers. And I'm not sure. I don't know the models. You always get these people that tell you a lot more than people that have seen them know or people that have been in them know. But what I would say is that there seems to be a problem with one race of aliens that have these flying triangles and maybe countries around the world that have this technology, the same type of technology, flying triangles. And there seems to be a bit of a standoff at the moment with these.
Right. You had also mentioned when you were talking to your sister about the about the beings that came through the wall. Has your family ever had any abductions happen to them that you're aware of?
Well, my family, there's only me and my sister alive now.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Only he and his sister are alive.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
There's only me and my sister alive now.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I know something very strange that happened. My dad was in the tank regiment, and he went and he was doing special ops. We're in a special atomic weapons training.
Okay.
And he'd basically witnessed an atom bomb going off. Oh, wow. He was in a tank, and apparently was supposed to be able to fire atomic weapons, like these shells. Mm-hmm. Now, my dad wouldn't even tell me about this. Me and my sister had no idea my dad were in the army. It was a conscript. We only found out later on by accident when there were an old boys meeting, and one of the guys from the tank regiment came to our house and were talking to my dad. We couldn't believe his ears. You know, me and my sister were sort of like, wow. You know, we didn't even know. But he'd been in, and I've got photographs of him now, in this this uniform, this white silk sort of thing that says Atomic Umpire.
Right.
So he was very interested, and he were annoyed that he missed the UFO when he were at work on a break. And when he turned around, this torpedo thing had disappeared. And he always wanted to see. But there was something about me dad, and he never slept properly, and he'd always wake up joking, and he could never tell us why. You know, there was me and my sister, you know, surmised that somewhere along the line that there were problems. You know what I mean? I mean, we could never figure out them, you know. But my mum told us about her blood type, her blood group.
Right.
And I was told that, you know, that this blood group is you know, maybe have some link to aliens. You know, this rhesus positive. Right. It could have a link to actual aliens. So I don't know, you know. I'm just trying to think. I think my dad might have had, there might have been something in my dad's past, you know, sort of like, because he didn't tell us too much, you know. But so me and my sister think that there might have been something when he was a kid, something might have happened to him.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, when is the last time that you were abducted that you remember?
It'd have been 2 years ago when I had these implants out my ear, my nose and my eyes taken out. Okay. And I was down here in this room when it happened. And I were on Facebook, I were talking to friends, and I even put a message up saying I've had something very, very odd happen. You know, that these things have come into this room, and it feels like they're taking something out of my ears, my nose and my eyes.
Uh-huh.
And that were it, you know. So I'm just hoping that is it now, to be quite honest, because, you know, it's too long. You know, what I've told you is nothing. You know, I mean, there's the other times when I've been taken on my motorbike, and I ended up again in this room, in this command centre. We put into a military unit, and we'd gone, you know, on a mission, and we had the helmets. I told you that we had helmets.
Right, right.
And then afterwards, we stopped using the helmet, and we had these transplants in his eyes, his nose, and his ears, so that, like the visual screen, when I looked, I could see, it came up, I could talk to headquarters or the unit commander, etc., and I could hear them through the implants in my ears. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, when I came back, what happened was I was telepathic when I came back. Right.
Okay.
And that is, that, you know, absolutely terrible when I came back and I was telepathic, because right. I knew what people were thinking. So I knew family members.
That could be frustrating.
Oh, well, it was more. It was, you know, because when you've got loved ones and a friend put it all into perspective, and he said, "Look, mm-hmm. how many times have we said something to each other, Russ? And we, you know, and you said, oh, you know, I want to, you know, kick your butt, and I want to do the same to you." He said, "But, you know, it's just said in that moment, isn't it? Where right. if it was somebody else that you didn't know, that mm-hmm. it was really meant." Then you would know. Where if it was a loved one and somebody, it's just, oh, some days, you know, sort of like, I don't know, you know, I might have upset somebody, and, you know, they might have said, you know, hey, lad, you know, grow up, you know what I mean? You need to grow up, lad, or, you know, sort of like, and you take it to heart because it's somebody you love that said it. Well, like he says, you know, how many times have I said this to you and we've might have fallen out a bit, and then he's forgotten. And he says, you know, this is a problem. If you have that ability, you know, to be telepathic, to you know, to read people's minds and what they're thinking, it's not a good thing.
Right.
You know, But you've got to train it, and you've got to train it on the right thing, and you know, it can't just be used as a. How can I put it? You've got to train yourself to understand what you're doing, because it could be a bad. You know, right. but it took a friend to explain it to me, and right. I realized that you might think these things. But you're not mm-hmm. thinking them maliciously.
Right.
But when it happens, it's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's
Could you tell when you were going to be abducted? I mean, is there anything that you felt or just knew? Or was there some type of communication?
No. Most of the time, I went out on my motorbike or on my scooter. Later on, I was in a car. Mm-hmm. And I would just basically come to one of these tunnels and drive, you know, and drive down it. In fact, I remember one time, I remember I drove down this tunnel, and then later on, I came out of the tunnel, but I was going in the opposite direction. It's the most bizarre thing. You're going down one way. And I remember coming back out of the tunnel.
That's strange.
Direction, you know?
that would freak me out.
Well, I nearly came off me. I had a motorbike at the time. And I went down the roundabout and only just picked it up and sort of like...
Right.
What happened then? You know, how the hell did that happen?
Well, no, I don't think I could handle that. I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was on a pretty big bike as well, you know, pretty fast bike. So, you know, it's like...
I'd have crashed it. I don't know how you managed to just not crash.
Yeah. I would have laid it over.
I have done a few times. I've had all sorts of... I've had a chain kick come off at 80 mile an hour.
Oh, hell.
And, you know, and I was lucky. You know, I'm still here, you know, and I've fallen off, I've strange things, you know.
That's when I would find out that I bounced.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, the thing is, either I'm crazy. I mean, the way I look at it is either, you know, what has happened? I mean, the thing is, I'm still trying to get to the bottom of this.
Right.
Yeah, it's life-changing.
I mean, I can tell you exactly how we travel, the devices, what we use for travel, the different ways of traveling. There's also time travel, which, to be quite honest, I don't think we're, as humans, I don't think we're meant to go through this. And I think a lot of the problems that I have with my health is being caused by the time travel and the teleportation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's got to be hard.
And, you know, it puts a strain on not only your body but your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it must do, you know. And then have all this to be going on and continuously thinking, mm-hmm. you know, sort of like, am I going crazy or has this happened?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how do you...
One more question, Pete. We're almost out of time.
Okay. Well, how do you keep yourself, sane with everything that's going on? I'm not saying that you're insane, but I mean, how do you keep yourself level with everything?
Yeah, how do you keep your sanity?
I'm not saying I'd be the first person to put me in the face. If you're looking for somebody saying, you've come to the wrong place.
Yeah.
You know, I'd basically, I love motorbikes, I've, you know, but the problem is I can't do stuff now because I'm in a lot of pain.
Right.
I like music, I like art. I've done all sorts of things, in you know, from making swords and daggers. Uh-huh. You know, sort of like art. I'm, you know, an artist. Uh-huh. Built motorbikes up and choppers, and sort of like it's still there. But the problem is with my illness. You know, I'm in a lot of pain, and I can't. You know, sort of like.
Yeah.
I used to be in a martial arts. I used to train a lot. So I mean, you know. From my life has just turned upside down compared to what it used to be. You know what I mean? And it's like nothing is the same. So the things that I love to do, what I can't do anymore, it sort of like breaks your heart in a way because
yeah.
you want me to do these things, but you can't because my body won't let me do it now.
Right.
I hear you. We hear you too, but you've had a lot more stress than I've had on mine. So, well, we're up against the end. Ross, we're glad we had a great connection with you tonight so we could hear everything. So that was a plus. But if anybody's looking for you, you're on Facebook, and aren't you on YouTube? Don't you have a YouTube channel?
I have, yeah. Flying Saucer Television and Russ Kelly. I think I've still got a website, BritishUFOHunters.com.
Ah, okay. And then on Facebook, too, they can find you. Okay.
Not that anybody wants to find me.
Well, we've been trying.
Just walk on by.
Yeah. Well, we're about up against the end right now. So thank you so much for staying up over there and being on our show. We really appreciate it. And we want to have you back again in the future.
Well, thank you. It's been lovely to be on your show. And thank you again.
Thank you, Russ. We're
thank you, Russ. It was nice talking to you.
Yeah, you and Pete had a lot to talk about because he's never met you before. So, all righty. Well, you have a great weekend, okay? And we'll be in touch about having you on again. Thank you.
Take care. Good night. God bless.
You too. Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yep, bye. There we are. Yeah, you can just hang up, Russ. That we're up against the end of the show. Great interview, Pete. Great interview.
I learned from you.
Oh, no, not me. They did. You did a great job. You got to a lot of topics. That's good. So, but anyway, folks, you've been listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network and iHeartRadio Partner. Stay tuned for Miss Kathy Bilski and Quantum Leap. You're going to get high, stay up, get creepy, and listen to Terminus Dark Ambient Radio, soon to be revised. So hang in there. I'll get some new things going. And anyway, also, if you can listen to UPRN anywhere, there are archives of radio shows and podcasts. Be sure to follow us, the Supernatural Substation, on Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, and elsewhere. So just search us, Follow the Darkness. Thank you, Pete. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Good night. Good night, Bernadine, wherever you are.
And Bernadine, feel better.
Stay in bed. All right, folks. Y'all have a great weekend. See you next week.
Good night, y'all.